launches this one in the direction of Mike Sims Walker. This one's going to be batted and caught. Touchdown! Oh my gosh! How did that happen? It was batted back into the arms of Mike Thomas, and the Jaguars have won it. Holy cow!
How did that happen?
That's unbelievable. Mike Sims Walker batted it back. Oh, Hail Mary!
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
Hey, welcome in everybody. First time we've had a chance to reflect on a Jaguar on-field performance like that in a long time, albeit only the preseason. The W really doesn't matter in the end. Everybody wants to feel good about winning, but it's about the level of performance on the field, and we'll get into that today. Ryan, and certainly some good and plenty of bad as well. Nothing to bury the team with, but I think plenty to be excited about. And obviously starting with the quarterback of the future and Blake Bortles, the question will become, how soon will that future get here if he continues to perform at a level that is noticeably better than the guy who's starting in front of him?
Well, it should have moved the timetable up to today in terms of getting some first-team snaps, but Gus squashed that Friday night and Saturday morning. So the problem they're running into, and I wrote about this, is they thought going into camp that they get Chad Henne ready for the regular season, get him confident in a rhythm, and then play Blake Bortles a little, start the fourth game with the ones for a couple series. Can't do that if your starter's not ready to go. So if he keeps on scuffling, that's going to push the timetable back, I think. Because they remain committed to starting Henne in week one against Philadelphia. They haven't deviated from that one way or 1%. So I think it's almost the status quo at that position.
Yeah, and I think really, though, to be fair to judge what we're seeing out there on the football field, we have to see him eventually with the ones, because you look at what Blake was able to do, but he's playing basically with the same receivers that Henne's playing against or playing with. Henne's playing against the first-team defense out there. That offensive line was getting collapsed all first quarter by the Buccaneers, and really couldn't get a whole lot going in the running game, couldn't get any push up front. It wasn't that Henne was under constant duress, but didn't seem like guys were running wide open. Then you had the comedy of errors with the snaps. The circumstances all seemed to kind of snowball out of control to really not give you a chance, but Henne had that one opportunity. He had Allen Hurns running on a crossing route, and had him open by, he had a separation, you could see daylight between himself and the defender, sailed it over his head. So, you know, that's the one thing we didn't see from Blake, with the exception of one play where he threw a play where a defensive lineman really could have picked the ball and who knows, maybe taking it back the other way. He was pretty much spot on with his passes.
It was almost like two different game plans.
Just some slight issues apparently going on with Jaguars today live at the practice fields. We're going to wait a few minutes while they try and reconnect. And you are listening to 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. Hope everyone had a wonderful time at Friday night's preseason game. And we'll be back after a short break coming up next on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we're back with you here at Jaguars Day. It's Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony.
Where were we?
Had a football that came crashing through, knocked us off the air. It happens to this proximity to the practice field. It, you know, has its pluses, but occasionally has its minuses. We were talking quarterbacks, Ryan. Kind of reset the thought. I don't know what the last thing people heard was, but talking about, you know, basically the circumstances, the situation between these two guys, and the game plans as well, kind of night and day on Friday.
They really were. I mean, with that first-team offense, they didn't have great field position. You lost 5 yards on the first play of the game when Jacques McClendon got pushed into the goalpost by Gerald McCoy. So, not ideal circumstances. I mean, they really wanted to establish the run part of their game and then some short passes. When you saw Bortles come in going against lesser players, they took some shots downfield, a lot of 16, 17, 18-yard passes. So, really different looks.
It really was. And, you know, to me, sometimes you come in with that script that we're going to run this, right? You get knocked for a 5-yard loss on first down. I'm thinking maybe you want to then throw that pass to Todman on second down, pick up half the distance there, and then they end up, you know, they ended up getting the 5 back, and then they throw one underneath, at which the defense will take every time if you're in 3rd and 10, and they'll have to come up and make the tackle. So slow start in that regard. We also were getting ready to talk about Marquise Lee. How big of a warning sign is it for you that here you got a guy who has got a great opportunity. He's the one guy. He's healthy. He's got a track record of accomplishment in college. A lot is expected out of him, expected to be a starter from the jump. And the big thing coming out of it, okay, he didn't have a catch in his first preseason game. Nobody's going to say anything about that. But when Gus Bradley questions his drive and his effort in the game, that's a red flag.
He played like a guy who knows he's starting week one, and that's not good enough for Gus. So,
not when you're a rookie in the first preseason.
So, Gus, you know, we're gonna talk about it later with Lee because we haven't heard from him yet. But I've been hearing it was just one play that really, really drew their ire. He didn't come out of his route great. He didn't run sort of like rounded a route instead of stemming it off. So, it was interesting because Gus didn't really do that a lot, but he was asked about it and he brought it up and we ran with it because it was interesting. And because, like you said, it's a rookie who knows he's going to be starting, at least show up a little bit on the first game.
Right. And if it is really one play, this could be Gus Bradley. Maybe this is something that they have seen a time or two in practice. I'm just, you know.
Talking to him behind the scenes maybe hasn't worked.
Right. And so, you know, you put him on blast a little bit and say, you know, can you show up for us? Really, you know, it's, as we mentioned at the top, Chad Henne's working with a set of guys going up against the guys that the Bucs are going to roll out there in their opener as starters, whereas the guys he's throwing to are not necessarily going to be the case. I think the drops by Mike Brown were as surprising as just about anything that we saw out of this wide receiver core. Blake Bortles handled it pretty well, said I'll continue to go back to this guy, and he made a couple of catches after that. But the first one, he was going to get clobbered on it. But it,
tough catch, but you got to make it.
You got to make it, right? I mean, that's the thing, and you could clearly see he took his eye off and he looked at the defender coming his way. The other one a little bit high, but again, I mean, in the NFL, the degree of accuracy, that's not a spot-on pass, but that's good enough to bring in, certainly.
Yeah, I think the second drop was more egregious than the first one.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
He wasn't going to get high load.
Right.
And it was a third and long that they would have converted. So that would have put them in the red zone. So Mike bounced back with a big catch. You know, Bump has said alligator arms on that inside the 10 catch or drop. So, I mean, you look at 7 of 11 with 3 drops, you know, Bortles' numbers could have even been a lot better.
They could have. And to nitpick on Bortles a little bit here, you know, a couple of those to Mike Brown could have been slightly more on target. They were certainly catchable. I'm not arguing that. The one to Bumpus was catchable. But did it hit him perfectly in stride? You know, there are little things, and I think that's good. I don't think you want your rookie quarterback coming out of that game feeling like, wow,
I got it.
This NFL is a lot easier than I expected. Now, really, the first quarter belonged to St. Derek Mark in this game. And we talked a little bit last week about the lightning package and would they actually experiment with the four Leos. If they were thinking about it, I think they should stop thinking about it right now because he's got to be on the field in that package.
Yeah, I mean, and also to me, that four Leo thing is the music has been turned up.
Wow, that is the loudest I've ever heard it out here. That is unbelievable.
The four Leo things, to me, that sounded like something they're just going to save. You know, for the regular season until they need it. But, you know, so Derek is looking to prove that he still belongs on the field on third down.
Right.
Plays like that, he makes it happen.
I mean, he looks like he belongs on the field on every down, every snap that he is. You know, you got to rotate those guys to the defensive tackle position. But while he is feeling good, I wouldn't take him off the field with that start that he had. And, look, a lot of other good signs. Chris Clemens gets a sack. I thought Chris Smith, first step, although a little quick, a little too quick at times, was noticeable. Tyson Alualu, again, carried over what we've seen, at least that aggression that we've seen, and made a really nice move. He went up the field on the offensive tackle and then kind of just let him slide by him and cut back to the inside when he got the strip sack. So it wasn't just one guy. It wasn't just Marks blowing up the offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, that's a positive sign is, you know, first play of the game, stretch play to the left. Roy Miller holds up the center, so Puzlesny's unblocked. That's a little, you know, that's going to be a big thing, a healthy Roy Miller. Then you look at Clemens winning his one-on-one. Marks abusing both guards. Alualu, that was sort of a coverage sack. So it, you know, everybody sort of played a part. It's going to be interesting to see if you can get a four-man rush that just opens up to play a lot of different things.
No question. And for Puzlesny, we talked about it on the post game. The key, he's going to make a lot of tackles regardless. The key is he going to make them moving towards the line of scrimmage
yeah,
like
yeah.
he did on that
yeah,
play?
You know, I mean, you know, the last 2 years, he's done a lot of chasing.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, they won on first down, so that gives, you know, puts you in second and long. That means you can rush the passer. And then third and long, that means you can really rush the passer. And I think they only ran one game. That was on the interception where they blitzed Posluszny. Then when they kept the running back in, Telvin Smith was a free blitzer, pressured in the interception.
Right. Telvin Smith showed up, man. I mean, everywhere you looked, he was around the ball, a lot of energy, and certainly that play was an impact play, and it got the Jags on the scoreboard, and this is what it sounded like.
Recreated, Frank.
Throwing to the middle of the field. It's intercepted. Winston guy's got it at the 45, to the 50, to the 45 at Tampa Bay, still on his feet, up the left sideline. Can Winston get there? Still on his feet. Did he get knocked out of bounds? Let's see what they say. Touchdown, Jaguars. How do you like that?
How do you like that, Frank Franchi's first touchdown, albeit preseason, Frank? How did it feel?
You know, it's funny you said it. I was talking to Lauren before the show, and she was setting this up. I went back and listened. I liked it, then I said, gosh, are you too over the top for a preseason game? But I was excited, you know. So you always go back and listen to your call. But, you know, you got to ask that question. So I kind of asked myself that question a few times.
I would say maybe you were a little excited for a preseason game. Not, I'm not criticizing, but if you average out you in the TV broadcast, you're probably right about where you needed to be on that one.
Yeah, I didn't even.
What are the chances that the first touchdown call was going to be 68-yard
interception? Exactly. Oh, it's great play.
It was kind of cool. I was driving home afterwards and hearing JP, you and JP on the post game. It was kind of cool hearing it. I said, that's pretty cool. That was me.
That was kind of cool. No, look, I mean, one thing, that play was indicative of what we've been talking about a little bit, pass rush. That's a new concept we're going to have to explain to the fans of the Jacksonville Jaguars because it hasn't been in existence in a while.
Boy, and I tell you, you got the feeling. I know Tampa Bay may not be the best line in the league, but you got the feeling if the starters played the whole game, then Derek Marks had about 5 sacks, didn't you? They never blocked him. They didn't even. It was a wave and a dirty look trying to block him.
Well, you hit it on the head, Frank. Is that's still a starting offensive line in the NFL, and if you're any good, you take advantage of bad people. That's what they did.
Yeah. Right.
You know, so it kept. You know, it was relentless. McCown probably couldn't wait to get out of the game.
You know, it is funny you say that because the story here we're looking at, man, how concerned are we about the interior of the offensive line here, whereas in Tampa they're saying the same thing about their offensive line.
A lot of teams.
You know, and that's the thing. We feel that the defensive line is pretty good. They feel their defensive line is pretty good, and they are. So there's kind of a combination of those factors working.
You know what? We were talking about it during the broadcast. Gerald McCoy on one team, really good. He had 9.5 sacks last year, and there were some games that he mostly got them from the interior. That's 9.5 sacks for a tackle. That's Warren Sapp stuff. And then Derek Marks looked just like him, didn't he? I mean, it was. We watched two kind of premier three technique get off the ball pass rushers in the same game. So you're right, Mike. I thought that kind of jumped off the screen to all of us.
You know, Telvin Smith saw the quotes from Gus Bradley this offseason. He said, you know, got him up to 218, 219. We feel like if he can get to 225 and hold it, he's a future three-down linebacker. He's talking 6 pounds here. I mean, how much this guy, I'm not saying he's ready to play three downs right now, but you can see there's a point in the future that you're going to feel they got a steal in the fifth round.
Boy, he is an active guy, man. You know he can cover. He's on the team to drop back and cover, Ryan. But he's an active guy. He'll be active as a pass rusher. He will cover those tight ends. Yeah, he's fun. It's more fun when he's in the game. The game is going to be more fun for the Jaguars when he's in the game. I really think that.
And by trusting him on third down, that makes Geno Hayes a two-down linebacker, which keeps him fresher. And you know, he's been a surprise at camp for me that he's been able to be out there just about every day. He's had a couple of days off. So, you know, with better depth up front at linebacker, it's sort of, you know, guys are ready to go longer.
Yeah, and also, I mean, really, you go back and rewatch the game. He was on second down in the very first drive. So they had him in there pretty early.
Yeah, and when they played nickel on second down.
Yeah, yeah. True. So I guess, yeah, anytime they're in nickel, they're going to do that. Alan Hearns, I thought, stood out, you know. We were just talking about Mark Beasley before you pulled up the chair here. You know, you wouldn't have noticed necessarily that he didn't have a catch. A lot of guys don't have a catch in their preseason debut. Gus Bradley calling him out for the lack of effort. And as Ryan said, it was one play in particular that he was critical of. But Hearns, I thought, was open all night. Henny missed him on that crossing pattern, but Blake Bortles didn't have any problem finding him.
You know, it's funny. The guys, we're just we're radio guys, like, we watch it, and the coaches coach the technique and all, and I don't pretend to know that. But you can tell when a guy looks smooth, can't you? When he's coming out of his breaks, when he knows how to separate, when he knows when to slide, when not to. Boy, Allen Hurns looks like a good player. I've told Mike this before, Ryan. I had him four times in college, and because Stacy Bailey was a really fast guy, or Stacy Coley's a really fast guy, and Philip Dorsett was, you know, they had all these fast guys, and he was just the guy that caught the ball, right? So he didn't jump out the page, off the page, because Stephen Morris would check down to him for a seven-yard gain, and then he'd throw it over the top to Dorsett, and then he'd check. But, boy, he's a good-looking player. One thing I figured out, being at all these practices, what you see out here is real. You know, when Allen Hurns goes by all these other guys that have been here before, it's real. When people say this defensive line looks like it's going to be legit, it's real. The two things, the two or three things that we all watch, Mike, you talked about it. Everybody wanted to watch Bortles. Well, he looks for real. Everybody wanted to watch that defensive front. It looked like it's for real. And this, in the kind of the camp stars, guys like Allen Hurns look great, too.
I'll throw a guy into that, too. I mean, he had about, in practice here the last 3 weeks, he's had about five beheadings that could have been.
Yeah, he lets you know about it.
And, I mean, he gave me a great quote last year from his time in Seattle. He said Cam Chancellor told him he didn't know how to start slowing down until he started playing for free, which means fines. So Winston got fined last year, and Dwayne Walker was saying this morning, he goes, this guy has bought into the process that keep things in front of you, play fast, but play smart. Right place at the right time on the interception, then you saw his instinct. So I think Guy was another guy, pun intended, transferred practice to game.
And I'll tell you, Mike, if he turns out to be good, which, my goodness, you know Sip's going to be good. You know Grotz is going to be pretty good. Between McCray, who I think is a really good young player, and whether Ball has another good year in him, my goodness, if Winston Guy turns out to be a good player, what a nice secondary that is.
And I agree. Look, Winston Guy's the guy that Tony and I have been talking about all summer. You see him every practice, you know, just kind of flash that, like Ryan said, he's in that area ready to decapitate somebody.
Salute.
You got to keep it in somewhat of a perspective because, this camp seems to be translating what we see to on the field, at least for the first preseason game. It may change this week on Thursday night. And how many years in fact? You can go to any camp in the NFL and you see guys that get you excited all throughout the offseason, and then the season rolls around and they can't duplicate it on the field. So it's a good sign that they are carrying that over, but that doesn't mean it's a guarantee that it's going to continue to last that way. You know, you talk about this team the last few years. Coaches always say, you know, it's a couple of plays that are the difference between winning a bunch of games and not winning a bunch of games. Nate Stupar with the near interception. That one ended up getting points on the board for Tampa. They got a field goal on that drive. That could have been a pick six going the other way. He had a full head of steam if he picks that thing off. It's those kind of plays, I think, that is ultimately going to determine the margin for how good this team is. Is this team a six-win team? Is this team going to challenge for eight or nine wins?
Well, I agree with you. Stupar I kind of like, by the way, because they need some depth in there, particularly that Mike spot. Remember, he picked off a ball first day or two out here from was it Bortles?
Bortles.
Yeah, remember, so made a nice one-handed interception. So, again, practice of the game. You know, Mike, I think if this defense is as good as it, if it's almost as good as it looked the other day, if you keep yourself in enough game, if you trail enough games 17-13 going to the fourth, you're going to win some of those games. What you can't do is be down 28-3 going to the fourth. So if that defense, Ryan, keeps, you know, if you're in enough of them, well, you're going to win some of those.
I think the Cleveland game is the perfect example of that last year. Offense wasn't great the whole game, but they created a couple of turnovers on defense, hung around, and then finally the offense puts a two-minute drive together and wins it at the end. You know, like these guys reel off these stats in these buildings, you know, X amount of percent decided by less than 7 points. This team wants to get to is the fourth quarter because, like you said, the law of percentages are going to work out.
Frank Frangie here with us, Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Jaguars today live at the Florida Blue practice fields. A couple of other notes I thought on Denard Robinson's touchdown. That's where you're going to see him shine. I thought it was a terrific play call more than anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pure speed. On that call, they had everybody moving to the right side. And if you get him with a head of steam, I mean, really, he didn't even have to make a move. He just had to beat the guy to the corner. So that touchdown almost gave the Jed Fish more than anything.
You know what? Yeah, I'll tell you too something about that, too. We've got our production meeting on Friday just so Gus and the coaches kind of give us an idea what the plan is so we're not kind of caught off guard. And it was pretty clear Storm Johnson was playing ahead of Denard Robinson. You guys, I didn't know that until Friday. So
that was a surprise.
Yeah, but we were told on Friday, look, you're going to see Todman, then you're going to see Storm Johnson, and then you're going to see Denard. And I asked, I said, that order? Yeah, that order. And so Friday morning, I'm thinking, all right. So So I was glad to see Denard. He does have that burst. That's one thing he does have. And that was a great play call. That, whatever you call that play where they option it the one way and they faked it the little trap the other way, it was a great play call. But yeah, that was a fun, that one was a fun one. That was a fun one to call and it was a fun one to watch. And I was happy for Denard because he's a really nice guy.
And that's going to be interesting coming into Thursday night now. Does Denard move up a little bit? Does he get some first half reps? Because he didn't the other night. So did they think he needed a wake up call? You know, he had an okay camp, but obviously Storm had done some better things to warrant that. So that's another guy to keep watching because I'm still waiting to see if he's a productive NFL player and what form will it be.
Well, I think part of it too, Mike, Storm Johnson's a running back. That's what he is. He popped out of the womb as a running back. Denard Robinson's a guy, was he a receiver, is he a return guy, is he a slot guy, is he a gimmick, he was an offensive weapon. I think they're still trying to figure out they want him now to be a running back.
Uh-huh.
They've decided that's what they want him to be. But he got to the league, you weren't sure. Storm Johnson's a running back. That's what he is. And so the natural things running backs do, I think he does pretty naturally.
I think you got to avoid with him when he's on the field. They try to run him up the middle a little. You keep the defense honest. But right now, one game sample size is incredibly small. But either way, offensively or defensively, there's nobody was getting any push in the middle of the line of scrimmage. So Denard's not going to break too many tackles up in there. Storm Johnson, you can pound him up in there, and he might push the pile for 3 or 4 yards. So you don't want to get into a situation where if Denard Robinson's in the game, all they got to do is watch the edge as far as the running game goes with that. All right, Frank, on the road for the first time on Thursday night with the crew. How do you feel like Baselli and Logman did letting you get a word in edgewise?
I thought they did great. It was we had to learn. That's part of the deal. You have to learn each other, learn the rhythm of who's going to talk when, and that helped me a lot. I've got a pretty good idea who's talking first, how long they're going to go. You know, in an NFL game, when the guy puts his hand up there, it's 40 seconds. There's 40 seconds. Most snaps, when the team's not in a hurry up, go with between 5 and 12 seconds left on the play clock. We had a consultant come in. We were doing college games. So most snaps between 12 and 5 is when they're snapped. Now, some are snapped early if teams hurrying up, and some teams that are really milking the clock will snap it with 2 or 3 if you're running out the clock at the end of the game or half. But most are snapped right between 5 and 12. So I got between 28 and 35 seconds between plays. And those guys I thought did a very nice – if two guys are analyzing the play – they got about 10 seconds each, and I thought they did a nice job. I don't think anybody stepped on each other. So from my vantage point, I thought it went, we'll go back and work on it, but I thought it was pretty good.
I look forward to having Logman on tomorrow after he gets a chance. Yeah. You know, he's had a chance to, I'm sure he's watched the film by now, but throughout the season, Monday will be his day to watch the film and kind of analyze it, because particularly the play of Mike Brewster, because those two snaps stand out like sore thumbs. But I want to know, do they feel like he held his own regardless, outside of that, you know, you look back at that first play of the game, and it looked at first glance like it was Brewster, McClendon, that whole side of the line, but I don't know what the assignment was, but Brewster's 2 yards into the linebacking core, so I really didn't put that one on him. So, you know, I went back and rewatched it, trying to hone in on the offensive line play without knowing the assignments. I thought those plays probably made it look worse than it was.
Yeah,
on Friday night.
I love Gus's response yesterday. He says, we don't want to overreact. We got to react.
Yeah, right.
So I thought it was.
And that's the thing, too. You know, he said maybe it was a wet ball. Well, the ball was wet all night. Okay, your hands may have been wet all night. It was the two critical situations that he did it in. One that took you out of field goal range, and the other one's a fourth down. So you wonder, was it an anxiety issue? And at that, that's a bad sign. But certainly he's got time to work that out, we hope.
Well, the other thing, too, Ryan, the one thing he's distinctly been better than John McClendon at is snapping the ball.
Yeah.
Now, if he's going to struggle with his snaps, that helps John. I mean, that's a
great Bowenko.
Yeah. Well, but that's that battle between that three-man battle between Brewster, McClendon, and Linder for those two spots. That's maybe as good a battle as there is out here. Right?
Yeah. And at center right now, you're getting close to asking the question: is it a center competition or is it a center problem?
Right. Well, it's a competition regardless, but
yeah,
it may be the. You know, the best of two not so great options, yeah, at least after.
Because I thought Linder looked pretty good out there, so I just stick him in there, keep him there.
Yeah, he's going to win that job.
Yes, I'd do it right now.
Linder's going to be the right guard. I don't think
anybody. And he may be by Thursday night. Yeah. By the way, our buddy Duval Doom on Twitter said, no, you were not too excited. He says he does not give you much praise, but that was exactly what they want. So, as Jaguar fans. One call at a time.
Coming from Doom. Thank you. I want to be popular in Kingsland. So But coming from Doom, I'll take that.
See, he drops Kingsland to show that he has the knowledge of the of Doom.
Dude, I know. I even saw Doom's like skirt or his hat turned around backwards or something like that. I'm a Doom guy. Okay,
this is what Jaguars Today does. We bring people together.
Right.
That's
apparently
what this show is about.
We wash away all sins of the past. Frank Frangie on the call this Thursday night with the crew as the pregame gets underway at 5 o'clock for an 8 o'clock kick national television as well. Enjoy it, man. Have fun, and we'll talk to you later
Thanks,
on.
Thanks, Mike. I will, buddy.
There he goes, Frank Frangie. Catch him this afternoon with the entire Frank Frangie bunch at 3 o'clock right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Howard. We'll come back, take a look at some more of what we saw on Friday night, the good and the bad, and welcome your calls as well. We'll open it up for the first time at 641-1010. If you've got a question or a comment about the Jags' first preseason game, feel free to bring it to 1010XL on a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. It's Jaguars Today, live at practice, 1010XL 92.5 FM. Wild West brings you the show every Monday. It's Jaguars Today, live at the Florida Blue Practice Fields. Wild West, North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories. That includes revolvers, semi-autos, rifles, shotguns, you name it. If it fires, there's a good chance you'll find it at Wild West Guns and Gold. They'll meet or beat any gun shop's price in the United States of America, guaranteed. You can even trade your gold for guns. Visit Guns for Jacks, that's Guns, the number 4, JAX.com, or stop by their shop on Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693-0777, 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold. You're mentioning, we're going to, Tony and I will talk about this a little bit later on. You caught me with Maurice Jones-Drew talking, and one of the things I wanted to ask him, we had the Running with MJD show come back this weekend on Sirius, and I had to ask him about you know, what he meant by the Jags doing him wrong, because I think that didn't sit well with a lot of people. And then, quite frankly, I felt like he ducked me when I tried to get him on at that time early in the summer.
Putting it lightly.
Yes.
You know, he was disappointed in the lack of communication. Well, the Jaguars publicly stated philosophy on that was, if you have an offer, then call us. We won't call you, you call us. Well, then, you know.
Well, he admitted,
if he didn't take that as a sign, this team was moving on.
Oh, I get that, but he not to speak for him, but you can, probably find audio of the interview if you have SiriusXM on demand, and I made a post about it on my Facebook page. He admitted he spoke out of emotion, and I think that was as much of a mea culpa as I thought he was ever going to give on any subject, and said, look, as time went by, I realize, you know, this is a business, which is what he's always said from the player's perspective. So it's only fair that he looks at it from the team perspective as well. But he did end up saying that the one regret he had was he couldn't bring more team success to the fans that supported him over the years. So whether or not that was, just a well-thought-out answer, it was, I thought, about as good a way to end that chapter as you could.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, he knew you were going to ask it, so he had something ready for you.
And that may be the case, but
he
answered it.
But that's fine.
You know, that's his, and you can feel how you want about it. But if you want more in-depth on what he had to say, go to my Facebook page or go to the show's Facebook page. I posted that on the Jaguars Today page. We've got calls on the line, so let's get them. 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Howard, and Fat Tony here with you. Kyle is going to start us off on a victory Monday. How about that? Preseason.
Settle down, folks.
What? We don't know how many we're going to get.
They're out here practicing.
That's a home victory, baby.
What's wrong with enjoying it, man? You're such a spoil sport. Kyle, how are you?
Doing great, guys. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday, man. What's on your mind?
Just want to go back to the center battle conversation. I was just really wondering. I haven't heard much at all about Luke Pawenker. I know he's a rookie offensive lineman. It's not that exciting after game one of a preseason schedule. I was just wondering, what's the vibe with him around there? How's he looking? I know he's a big guy. Looks bigger than Brewster. Just didn't know where he's going to fit in with the Jags.
Well, he's not in the mix right now to play a big role. I mean, they feel he could be a number two center, number three center. You know, in camp, he's had some struggles, but you haven't really seen him with Bortles outside of a couple snaps. So this is a two-horse race at center right now.
All right. Thank you, Kyle. Where do you see Pawenker at the end of training camp? You think he's a practice squad candidate?
I think he's on the roster.
Yeah.
If you keep nine linemen, you keep the starting five plus McClendon, Bradfield, Bowenko, and then maybe another swing guy.
Well, I Logman talked up Nowak. I heard somebody calling this morning on the drill. He talked him up earlier this summer.
Talking up for 2 years.
Well, yeah, and I'm curious, you know, what is his status? What is it not, he's not done anything, I think, that's caught anybody's eye up until this point in time.
You talk to people about that, his name doesn't come up.
Right.
So, I mean, he was on practice squad last year, got called up late. So, you know, I don't know what if he's in their future. I mean, because you sort of think McClendon, if he doesn't win the starting center job, he's at least your swing guard center. But how many backup guards do you keep?
All right, let's go back to the lines. Let's get, who do we have next? Clint is up next here on Jaguars Today. Hi, Clint.
Hey, Mike. Nice to talk to you guys. The player that really stood out to me, and he made a big play, but Chris Smith, man, the way he explodes off the line of scrimmage, he got caught one time offsides, but the next three plays after that, it did not change his speed whatsoever. He was amazing to watch.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I don't think they're going to throw that offside flag every time, and he was right on that cut line just about every time, you know, and put it in the referee's hands. If you're going to use him the way I think they're going to use him, which is as a sub-package pass rusher, that's exactly what you're looking to show up on Friday night, and we saw it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the key is it, for Jaguars fans is you got to see him. That means they're in third and long.
Right.
You know, if it goes back to stopping the run on first down, that lets all this depth come to play. You know, if you're constantly in third and short, that means no Chris Smith, no Telvin Smith, less of Andre Branch, and you have to play bigger guys.
And I do think, kind of what Frank said, look, this defense, you would expect, based on, not just on Friday night, we've expected this based on what we've seen all summer.
Yeah.
This defense is going to keep the team in a lot of ball games.
It should, and they should get more takeaways. They only had 11 interceptions last year, 6 from the secondary, so they should, you know, create some more of those plays. So, and sack strips last year were something they did well. Just a matter of getting there when they, you know, 13, I think, last year. So I think they are going to, you know, tough matchup week one, but I think they should be able to keep some, you know.
Tough matchup right now, week two of the preseason. I mean, really, offensively.
Jake Cutler is going down.
We'll see. See, now who's overhyping it now? I mean, honestly, though, Cutler, Marshall, Jeffrey, Forte, Bennett, I mean, they've got skill positions line up with just about anybody in the National Football
League. Yeah, that's what I mean. It's almost like, you know, this is why you want to play these guys in the preseason, especially then the next week you get Detroit.
And they've got problems. Brian De La Fuente, who was a free agent that some people thought the Jags might take a look at, is out for at least, I think, the remainder of the preseason. They brought in somebody off the bench or off the street to kind of come in and fill that spot at least for the next month or so, it looks like. Danica, you're next up here on Jaguars Today. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. I'm doing good. I have to say I have the same observations as everyone else, that our defense is very much improved. I really enjoy the play of Derek Marks and Clemens, the guy, and even Telvin Smith flying around there and see if Alualu get in on the action. But, you know, just like the offense is worrying me so much. I wish we probably would have offered, you know, a key to the town, Alex Mack, to get him in on center, because I see that as a big problem.
Right.
Right. And, yeah. I want to see Bortles out there. I like that he didn't duck and cover with pressure, but if the line is not going to be up to par, I hate to say it, but make Winnie the sacrificial lamb and, just throw him out there till we get that, line better so we can protect our quarterback of the future. That's it. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Danica. There are two schools of thought there. If you got a guy who's got some mobility, you know, that you're better suited if the line's not going to protect very well. But look, we talked about this last week as well, Ryan, and we've talked about it a lot. Blake Bortles being ready is not based on one preseason game. It's not just based, even if Chad Henne had played well and Blake outplayed him, it's not just, that's just not the level. They're looking for much better than Chad Henne ultimately.
Yeah.
And at least for now, they're still trying to slow play it, but they feel like they know it when they see it.
Yeah. And to use the word you just used, ultimately when Blake Bortles starts, I think it's going to be 100% about what they're not getting from the other guy. Because really, and they've said it, you don't really know if they're ready until you get out there. So
right.
The circumstances by which Blake Bortles plays the game is that the offense just isn't producing.
6-4-1-10-10. Paul, you're next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, fellas. Hey, it's a beautiful Monday here.
I had a couple of questions. I thought maybe you could answer for me. One's serious and one's a little bit of a joke. But the first one is serious. Is there any chance we might get a little longer look at Stanzi? It sounds like he's consistent in practice. He was two for two on third downs, made good decisions. I'd like to just see a little bit more of him. Maybe we could dangle him, as trade bait to get a better center. And then, speaking of center, could this be a Michigan-Ohio State thing with Brewster and Henning? Maybe they just don't clash, they just don't mix.
That's it, right? They're like repelled like opposite poles.
I'll show you, Michigan.
Not that shtick. You'll get to see Ricky Stanzi play here against Atlanta. And maybe a lot of the second quarter, maybe some of the third quarter. I mean, the fact that he hasn't played anything in the regular season, I don't see him having any.
I don't see value. Anybody giving you anything to trade for Ricky Stanzi.
If you cut him, he'll probably get picked up.
Yeah, but I'll say this: the caller's right. He looked, he made a couple of good decisions. He made a nice throw or two in there, and didn't get you killed. And that's really what you want from a guy that deep in the rotation. Come in. Don't lose the game for you. Could you manage a game in an emergency type situation? But I haven't seen anything out of him enough that anybody's gonna, offer up anything.
Wasn't it refreshing to see a third string quarterback in Jacksonville have that kind of night and not be the start quarterback for the evening?
Right?
Wasn't that nice?
Yeah, no,
in
that
the
is nice. They're like, hey, because in years past, would that have been enough, Tony? To,
I know they'd be sitting there going,
clamoring for the starting job.
Why aren't we giving Matt Scott a chance here?
Right.
We had that discussion last year during the preseason.
All right, Ryan, I know you're going to go watch the rest of practice right now. What are you going to be looking for from this team to clean up coming off of Friday night as they practice for the next 3 days getting ready for Chicago?
If they have a separate drill with shotgun snaps, that's always nice to keep track of. But what I'm looking for Thursday night is, can they at least run it a little better than they did with the first unit? Are they going to expand their playbook a little bit with Henny, try to get the ball downfield? So, you want things to look a little cleaner as you go along this month.
What's your sense on how close Cecil Shorts and Toby Gerhart are?
The fact that Gerhart's not practicing today, which would be the only practices would get pads, I think he's out for Thursday. Last week I was told that Cecil, they're maybe gunning for Detroit for Shorts. And with the other guys, Robinson and Doss, may not be till week one.
Yeah, that's going to be a little bit later. Yeah. But those other guys we're keeping our eye on in the short term. And don't forget, you can't go 23-0 until you get the first one. That's 4-0 preseason, 16-0, and then 3-0 because you got the bye, obviously, at that point in the playoffs. So,
this is a division champion. What are you talking about?
Come on. It's all good, man. Let them enjoy a little success on Friday night, especially out of their rookie third overall pick quarterback, Blake Bortles. Ryan O'Howard, Florida Times Union, we'll see you later on this week. There he goes. It's Jaguars today on a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. When we come back, we're going to take a look at this state football history. Also, the Honda drive around the NFL. Fat Tony Reed joins me next. It's Jaguars today on a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history presented by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. 1919, Tony, there's actual news on this date in football history.
Oh!
The Green Bay Packers Football Club was founded. So they're nearing their 100th anniversary.
That's
5 years
cool.
from now. It is pretty cool. In 1962, groundbreaking started for the NFL Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. We know who worked on that. Alan Page, who's enshrined there. He worked on a construction crew. Talked about that last week. Who helped put that thing together. So the Packers were founded on this date in 1919, and the Hall of Fame construction began in earnest. The first shovel full of dirt was turned over. This date in football history presented by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. At the Best Fence Company, their mission is to fabricate and install the highest quality product at a competitive price and still give you unsurpassed customer service. They're going to give you a professional free estimate at your convenience, whether it's your residence, whether it's your place of business. Don't settle for anything but the best. Call the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville today at 268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. And that is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
All right, let's take a look around the National Football League. Some of the news and notes coming out of the first week of the NFL preseason. In case you missed it, on Saturday, Vikings defensive tackle Linval Joseph was shot in the calf early Saturday morning. He said that he expects to be back, quote, in the near future. but it could be a couple weeks, which, Mike, I guess is the near future if you've been shot. A couple weeks is pretty good.
That's pretty good if you've been shot, I would say, yes.
Recovery time. Speaking of the Vikings, we've been talking a ton about Blake Bortles today for obvious reasons. Here's the rookie quarterback stat check after week one of the preseason. Bortles, we know, 7 of 11 for 117 yards. Manziel was 7 of 11 for 63 yards. He also added 6 carries for 27. Teddy Bridgewater, 6 of 13, not all that impressive, for 49 yards. He also had a fumble, although they did recover that fumble in his game. Jimmy Garoppolo, probably the most impressive of the rookies this week, 9 of 13 for 157 yards and a touchdown. Derek Carr out in Oakland, 10 of 16 for 74 yards and a pick. And Tom Savage, Savage Nation, two for four for 14 yards.
Well, that, you know, two pass completions in four attempts, a pretty small sample size. But regardless, Bill O'Brien said that, I'm paraphrasing, they were atrocious.
Oh, and they were terrible.
They were bad, the Houston Texans. Also, I'll throw this one on board. As we saw the Jaguars front four obliterate the Buccaneers offensive line,
yeah,
changes afoot there as Jamon Meredith, one of the starting guards for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers,
bye-bye,
got tossed around. Welcome to the second team. He's now going to be a backup tackle for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Then Derek Marks has already left his mark. Jace Daniels will get the start there. First Coast Honda Dealers will present the drive around the NFL daily. We'll take a look at what's happening around the National Football League in addition to what's happening here at Jaguar Camp. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board and weigh in on Friday night. As far as whether you have a question or a comment, an observation of what you saw, I'm pleasantly surprised nonetheless, that we didn't get a spate of Bortles time right out of the box. And, you know, I think Gus Bradley did his best to kind of quell that over the weekend.
Sure.
Immediately in the post game afterwards, he deflected what questions about Blake and turned it around and kind of propped up Chad Henne and talked about other aspects of the team. Blake himself did a nice job kind of deflecting credit, saying, you know, I could have put the ball in better places for a guy like Mike Brown. Everyone's talking about how the maturity he showed, about saying he's going to go right back to Brown. He trusts the guy. It was not a good night for Mike Brown, though.
No.
For a guy you expect to be as reliable as pretty much anybody, he had the most experience, and, you know, Jerry Sullivan had been raving about him, and, you know, it's just one of those things that it could happen that way, hopefully Mike Brown, for his case, will bounce back this Thursday night, but there are a number of guys that need to bounce back, but there are also a number of guys we want to see if they can continue that momentum that they flashed kind of last Friday night. It's only preseason game one. That's the big thing you got to remember, and I know what Frank mentioned earlier about how it's nice to see everybody transferring everything from the practice field here,
absolutely,
out into the,
yeah,
game. That's great. Well, Tony, I go back to Billy Davis is an example I've been using for 15 years. I had over 500 yards receiving one preseason for the Dallas Cowboys and got cut. And, you know, that's just what you see in the preseason is not necessarily indicative of what you're going to see on the practice field. How many times do we see Blaine Gabbert looked good on the practice field, or at least reports indicated he looked good on the practice field, and then not back it up in game action. So Friday night, it's a solid start for some of the guys we were hoping to see some things for, but also at the same time, we're concerned about Mike Brewster. I want to hear more extensive talk from Jeff Logman in particular after watching the film as to how he played outside of those two ridiculously,
sure,
bad snaps.
Sure, I mean, the snaps were bad. The first one looked like Chad may have been able to help him out a little bit. It was a hot snap. The second one, that's completely on Brewster in that case. And yeah, I think we were talking a moment ago about the Tampa offensive line. They're already making changes. I think for me, you know, we've talked a lot about the Jags defensive line, that front four from Friday night. I think as impressive as anything, we've talked about how deep that group is in training camp. It's the fact that even when they brought in the twos, that second line of defensive linemen, they were still all over the Tampa Bay quarterbacks all night long. And seeing that kind of thing for a team that hasn't been able to generate pressure with four guys in the better part of a decade, it feels like. I mean, this is not a team that can get after the quarterback. To see that on Friday night, and the word I would use to describe what we saw on defense, and you felt it as soon as those guys walked on the field, Mike, swagger. And whether they believe in what is happening on the practice field, they believe in the additions they've had during free agency and through the draft, and it showed up immediately for this team on the field. Derek Marks, I don't think we talked enough about him and how much having Red Bryant and Chris Clemens, having to block those guys up instead of say we're going to block Derek Marks, well, now you have to make a decision if you're an opposing offensive line, and you saw it coming to play on Friday.
Yeah, and really, that's something I think we're going to see happen all year long is we're not going to talk enough about Red Bryant, because Red Bryant, that's...
He made that one play. Oh, my God.
Right, but he's not going to make as many splashy plays.
Right.
What he's going to do is he's going to allow these other guys, like you said, to make their splashy plays.
Yeah, three different guys tried to block him on a stretch run. He ran through all three blocks and made the tackle a yard in the backfield on the sideline. Unbelievable
play. Right, he'll make those, but as many as of those as he makes, he'll make a lot more where he's just holding two gaps and he's occupying multiple blockers.
Sure.
And guys like Derek Marks, you give him single coverage. It looks like, you know, early returns, pretty good that he's going to try to live up to that contract, you know, rest on his laurels as far as that goes. 641-1010 Jaguars today. We're live at the Florida Blue practice fields on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Let's go back to the phones and welcome Mary to the show. Hi, Mary. You're on Jaguars today. What can we do for you?
Hi. Good morning. How about Jamel Fleming towards the end of the game? That was awesome.
Yeah, he showed up, and I think, Tony, he's a guy that we've noticed, you know, that far down the depth chart as he seems to be, and it's a competitive group in the secondary, he's still had his days out of practice where you said, oh, okay, this guy is around the ball, he's flashing, he's breaking up pass plays. So, just another, another positive, I think, if you stuck around to watch late in the game.
Yeah, I mean, he looked good there in the fourth quarter. I thought that Josh Evans struggled a little bit on Friday night based on what I saw. There were a couple plays where it looked like he was a little bit out of position, and, you know, he's only been in practice for 4 or 5 days, so maybe he's still trying to knock off some of that rust at this point. Evans was officially listed third on the depth chart. He came in second behind Winston Guy at that spot, and Winston looked good. I mean, he had the pick six. It's hard to tell what the secondary looked like. As good as the front four was,
right,
it's really hard to get a read on what the secondary actually looked like in that game. Hopefully they get a bit more of a test on Thursday.
You would expect that you're going to get Josh McCown had a nice half season last year. Prior to that, at times he was atrocious. Downright horrible as an NFL quarterback. The Buccaneers, Lovie Smith in particular, has a familiarity with him, and I think he sees him as maybe a little higher upside Chad Henne for that football team, that they've got a young guy in Mike Glennon that ultimately they've got a lot of vets right now. They went out and spent a lot of money in free agency, and they think McCown is better suited to kind of lead that team and steer the ship right now. And he's coming off, you know, a half season where he should feel as good about his game as at any point in his career. You wonder, what is he really?
Yeah.
You know, and are we buying a little bit of fool's gold on him, expecting him to do what he did with Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey last year with Mark Trestman, they call him the quarterback whisperer, kind of guiding his career for the first time.
Well, yeah, and Jay Cutler, everyone's talking about it up at camp. He looked as comfortable as he's ever looked playing the quarterback position for the first half of last season under Trestman. He likes that offense. It's very comfortable for quarterbacks. McCown shine. For the first time in his career, he shined in that offense. I thought the Tampa Bay was making a mistake paying him that kind of money to bring him in to be the starter. Look in the draft to try to find an answer, or stick with Glennon for a year and get a guy that you can develop. But the idea of bringing in McCown to be the guy, I just don't see it.
See, it's curious because now they're saying that they believe Glennon's a quarterback of the future. Well, he already got his feet wet last year. Why don't you continue to roll with that? And I do feel that Lovie wants to come in and he wants to win immediately, and he's used to winning, you know, double-digit games, and I think they've got enough around, and the question is, how good are they up front? We don't know. I mean, the Jags' front four look very good, but how bad will the Bucs' offensive line turn out to be? It's probably a combination somewhat of both of those things. I don't think necessarily is the Jags' offensive line as bad as it looked at times trying to get push in the middle.
Let's hope not.
Or, you know, is Clinton McDonald and Gerald McCoy one of the better tackle tandems in the National Football League on the defensive side of the football? 641-1010. Marcus, you're next up here on Jaguars today. How you doing?
Hey, morning, guys.
Good morning. What's up?
So I went to this trip. I just got back in town from overseas and getting ready to retire, so it's good to be back in Jacksonville. So that's number one. But when I went to the scrimmage game, I think your co-host said it, where the defense showed swagger early on, and they didn't let off the throttle the entire game. And I think that's something that needs to, I hope they establish that identity a little better. You know, it's like, they gotta make their presence known early on. I think with that comfort of having a good defense, you know, keeping the score down and stuff will help, Chad Henne. With Chad Henne, he looked horrible. In the scrimmage, I thought he looked good. In this preseason game, you know, he looked all over the place. But then you look at Gabbert and something's missing from him. He's missing, I don't know if he's missing that arm strength or something, but he has, I saw his longer balls be a little wobbly, where his shorter balls were like on a line.
You realize what you just called Blake Bortles, Marcus? You just called him Gabbert.
I did. And my apologies.
You did.
Bortles?
Yes. Don't apologize to me. Apologize to Blake Bortles. For God's sakes. Are you kidding me? Does he throw the John Elway ball? No, but Tony, I'll tell you this, that those were better spirals than he's thrown. He threw 11 passes. The only one that I had saw a noticeable wobble on was the one where he had a defender in his face and he's thrown off his back foot and he still hit Kerry Taylor for a completion on the right sideline. And had you not known he had the bobble issue going to that game, I don't think he would have said, boy, that guy throws a funky ball. I thought he threw a pretty good ball. And it's just, look, it's not that howitzer, but the ball got there, consistently got there, even in tight coverage, I thought.
Yeah, and down the field. I mean, the idea that he was throwing the ball 15, 20 yards down the field consistently, and when you go back and watch that game on Friday night, I know we can talk about the first-team offense was behind the chains immediately with the five-yard loss. They started a drive from the three-yard line. That's a difficult situation to start in. They have the bad pass by Chad Henne that could have extended a drive, a couple bad snaps. Not a whole lot went right for the first-team offense with Chad Henne out there. They didn't complete a pass to a wide receiver when Chad Henne was on the field. And from the very moment we talked about the swagger, the caller mentioned it getting there for the defense, from the moment that Blake Bortles stepped on the field, there was a rhythm on the offensive side of the ball, and the ball was getting downfield on time and accurately to these wide receivers. Whatever the circumstances were for Chad Henne, that wasn't happening.
No, it wasn't, but at the same time, you know, that's why we want to see him, Blake Bortles, with the first team at some point, because there's no Gerald McCoy collapse in that pocket.
No.
You know, the circumstances are completely different. There's no Altron Burner covering your guys out there. Henny's throwing to the same guys, but playing against the guys that the Bucks are paying the big money to stop them.
But the idea to this point that with Blake Bortles, and it's how I felt about him since they drafted him, when the lights come on, his game goes to a different level than we see in practice.
No question.
And to this point, through a scrimmage in a preseason game, that's exactly what we've seen. How high that level can be, look, he's not there yet. But the idea that he elevated his game to that point compared to what we saw 6 weeks ago in the offseason, did you see that in this guy? Because I didn't. Yeah, I was a little bit worried about his accuracy, his deep ball, these kinds of things. And some of them were a little bit high, but they were all there. And receivers had opportunities to make plays. He gave his guys a chance.
Hey, look, I think there's plenty, if you want to come away feeling positive about the team, there's plenty to hang your hat on. There's plenty to be realistic about as well. And if you want to be an outright pessimist, there's plenty. Yeah, look. The offense, what do they do, really? Certainly the first team offense did nothing. Blake Bortles didn't put him in the end zone. You know, so there are a lot of different ways you can spin it. In the end, I come out of that game saying the future of the quarterback position, the first glimpse, that's a thumbs up.
Absolutely.
The defense looks legit. Again, all you can go by is what you've seen up to this point. If Chicago goes and exposes the defense, then we'll reevaluate on Thursday night. That's why they play four of these things in the preseason. Wild West Guns and Gold brings you the show every Monday. It's Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, live at the Florida Blue Practice Fields on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Wild West Guns and Gold brings you the show every Monday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you, Ryan O'Halloran, and earlier along with Frank Frangie, and a lot more to come this week before kickoff of preseason game number two. First one on the road for the 1010XL 92.5 FM Jaguar broadcast crew. We'll be here. We'll be home.
Yeah. We'll be lonely in this building.
Let me tell you what, brother. We got out of here about when I expected, about 12:30, quarter to one, mm-hmm. The other night. You figure game's going to wrap up in about 3 hours, 2 hours of postgame, which was a blast working with Fred Taylor.
Oh, yeah. Phenomenal.
By the way, J.P. Shadrick, I said it on the postgame. I don't know how many people were on a Friday night. They may have been making sure that they got to their watering hole of choice. They may not have been listening to me at around 12:30 in the a.m. Sunday morning. But J.P. Shadrick did a phenomenal job. I mean, the work he put into putting together the pregame show and the postgame show, you just don't show up and sit down and start talking. I mean,
no.
Hats off to J.P. for all the hard work he did. But Fred is going to be a blast, and he's taking it very seriously. You know, he's like, man, this is a great opportunity for me, and I really, you know, he's got pages and notes that he's taking during the game. So I just love the perspective he has. I think he's a beloved Jag. I look forward to working with that guy all throughout the season. But so wrapped up around, what, quarter to one-ish, right?
Yep.
By the time we got out of here, got in the car, got home, I probably pulled in the driveway, I don't know, about a few minutes after 2 a.m., right? And which was fine because I didn't have to get up early on Saturday morning. Well, this week we kick off a half hour later. So figure,
just
push everything back half an hour. Maybe get home into the driveway around 2:30, 2:45.
Friday's going to be fun.
Friday, generally that alarm goes off sometime between 5:30 and 6 in the morning. That's presuming my head hits the pillow the second I get home. Maybe 3 hours.
Here's what we're trying to tell you, Jackson.
Maybe 3 hours.
We got a tough life.
We don't have a tough life, but what I do need is I need a lot of passionate Jaguar fans calling in and carrying the show on Friday.
I'm sure they will.
Is what I think we're going to need coming up this Friday.
Mike, why don't you just sleep there?
Fans out there. Well, where? Where am I going to sleep? On the floor?
Somewhere in the stadium.
Where?
Take Gus's couch or his bed, wherever he sleeps there. He won't need it.
I don't know if we're
that tight. We can just go to Coach Gus and say, hey, can I sleep in your office?
You have
office?
A private shower I can use as well?
Just phrase it like this. Hey, Coach, no. I want to get better. And for me to get better, I need to sleep here.
Well, I like to see my wife and child occasionally, too. So even if it's for a brief hour on Friday morning.
All right, fine.
Anyhow, as I was about to say, the fan base, we need you passionate on Friday, and Foundation Professionals of Florida understand that you are the foundation of the organization. We still got the tattoo contest going, final cool. week for that. If you want to get into the drawing for a pair of tickets to the real home opener, when the Colts come to town, we have the exhibition home opener. They hate that word, exhibition. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's an exhibition. It's a tune-up. Call it whatever you like. They're all the same thing. And the real one against the Colts, we're giving away a pair of tickets to that one where we will. Ultimately, when we get all our photo contest finalists, we'll draw one in the week leading up to the game. You can go to Jaguars Today's Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars Today. I repinned the tattoo contest back at the top. So if you've got some Jaguar ink, show it off. Foundation Professionals of Florida, your full-service foundation repair company, wants you to see it. They're going to give you the peace of mind, by the way, that your home is safe. The foundation of your home, if you don't have a solid one, well, you're going to be in trouble with your biggest investment. 287-2690. Visit foundationprosfl.com for more information. That's Foundation Professionals of Florida. 641-1010 if you'd like to get in here. I mentioned, Tony, earlier with Ryan O'Halloran, in case folks missed it, I kind of went through a little of what Maurice Jones-Drew had to say. I was very eager to ask him about his comments this offseason. We did the show debut season 5. It's almost half a decade. I like saying it that way because it sounds so long. Half a decade of the Running with MJD show on Sirius. And we did it this weekend. We're doing it on Saturdays for the next few weeks to accommodate his training camp schedule. And, you know, he feels like he's in a good place. He thinks he's going to surprise people, blah, blah, blah. As far as Jaguar fans are concerned, I wanted him to address what he meant by the Jags doing him wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan O'Halloran felt like he did a big backpedal. And in some ways, I think he would acknowledge that he did. Of course, Maurice would say, no, not at all. That's the first thing always out of his mouth. Like
no,
that.
Not at all.
No, not at all. No, not at all. And then he would explain something that, if you listen to the definition of it, probably was exactly what it was. But he said, look, he wanted more communication. And I understand what Ryan's saying. The Jags made it public that, you know, if you get an offer, come bring it to us. He probably felt like, look, man, I've been the face of this franchise for a while. I want a little bit more than that. I want to feel like, you know, here's what he always said to me is, just tell me what you're willing to pay me. Maybe you'll be surprised. Maybe I'll play for that. And I think it was pretty clear that the Jags probably weren't willing to pay him very much.
Right.
And
if he had gotten an offer and he had come back, whatever the offer was from Oakland or whoever, and comes back to the Jags and says, this is what they're offering the Jags, in all likelihood, are saying, all right, enjoy Oakland.
God bless you. And once they, look, he knew, he said himself, once Toby Gerhardt signed, he knew his days were over here in Jacksonville. And so he said, look, I spoke out of emotion. That's as much as you're going to get him to admit is him saying, shouldn't have done it, shouldn't have said it. And he said, as time has gone by, look, I understand this thing's a business, which he preaches all the time. And he always says that from a player's perspective. So you got to be fair. It's a business from their perspective too, buddy. And we all want to feel warm and fuzzy, but that's the reality of the situation. They wanted to move on and they wanted to go younger and all this stuff. And so anyway, I kind of paraphrased his comments on the Jaguars Today Facebook page if you want to check those out. And I'm sure there's some Jaguar fans saying, hey, you know what, we've moved on, and that's fine. But I know at the time that happened, there were a lot of people calling us that were none too pleased with the former number 32, now wearing number 21 for the Oakland Raiders. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board here, Jaguars Today, final few minutes of this segment here. Let's see, I'm trying to look down the rundown on anything I didn't really hit on. Mentioned so much about the defensive line play. Chris Clemens, though, with the sack as well. We talked about Tyson Alualu, which is a great sign to see. I really love the move he put on, and I meant to look up. It was on, I want to say it was on number 73, because I wrote the number down, and I couldn't tell you the name of the guy right now. But he got up the field and kind of did a little, I don't know what you could, just kind of like an arm bar and shoved him out of the way and cut to the inside, showed quickness, showed power, got to the quarterback, put the ball on the ground, and that as much as anything, Tony, even if the Jags don't recover all these, they're knocking the ball on the ground. So Derek Marks on a play that got called back anyway,
yep,
because it ultimately got completed, knocked the ball, would have had a sack fumble on Josh McCown, the ball falls dead right at McCown's feet.
He dribbled, basically.
I mean, just right there, and he was able to pick it up and complete a pass. It got overturned.
I love the replay on that one, too. Senderek knocks out, and he's celebrating with the fans in the end zone. Like, he doesn't even turn around to see the ball. He's just like, yeah! Because he knew he had knocked it out, and he figured somebody was going to be there because there were always three guys all over the quarterback.
Right.
And that goes back to the Alualu play you're talking about. The move was fantastic, but the move doesn't help if Chris Smith isn't coming off the other side and pushing him back up in the pocket. And then Alualu can come. And they had so many times the Clemens sack with Senderek Marks running the quarterback into that play for Clemens. We haven't seen that kind of combination from this defensive line since Stroud and Henderson were here.
Right. We've seen one guy maybe flash in there, and if he can individually get to the quarterback, okay.
Yeah.
That's why they're last in the league in sacks or near the bottom in the league in sacks for the last few years. So you hope that you're going to see a lot more of this kind of keep up. It's a good early sign, man, and the depth, the waves that they're going to come at you, I thought was pretty impressive.
It was chaos is what it was. On the offensive line of scrimmage for Tampa Bay for the first 2.5 quarters, virtually every snap resulted in chaos for that offensive line. And that's something that you see from the really good defensive lines in this league. That's something that, as a Giants fan, I got to see that from, you know, 09 to 11 and 12, basically, with the Giants. That snap would come, and it was just pandemonium for that offensive line trying to figure out how they're going to block these guys up. We see it in Seattle right now. We see it in San Francisco. The combination of strength and speed that the Jags seem to have on that defensive line is going to create issues. It was nice to see them create issues this quickly and that consistently in the first game.
It was Anthony Collins, number 73 for the Bucs, that Tyson Alualu, he's a starting left tackle for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So that's another good sign. And that's the thing. Here you have Alualu lining up as a right end on that play. He can play pretty much any spot on that line. Is he the best guy at any one spot? No. But he gives you that versatility, and I think he gives you that injury protection, too, that if anybody gets hurt, he's got the versatility to swing out just about anywhere. And really, the one thing I want to highlight, too, with Blake, it was all a party about Blake Bortles after the game. And understandably, fans are excited. When he goes back and looks at the tape, he'll realize how, and I'm sure he has already, he'll realize how lucky he was that Daquan Bowers didn't pick six him.
Yep.
Because he threw one that Bowers basically just bounced off his paws.
Yeah, watching that play, that's a really tough read for a rookie quarterback in his first, you know, series of action. Basically, to identify that defensive tackle basically is dropping back into cover. I mean, that's a really tough play because from a quarterback perspective, it looks like there's a lot of space behind him. But you see that kind of thing on tape and you learn.
You know, we talked about Nate Stupar earlier, right?
Yeah.
That one play that can turn it. Well, if Bowers hangs on to that football, even if he doesn't take it to the house, maybe he runs it back 10, 15 yards
Absolutely,
and gets run
yeah.
down. Then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, wait a minute. You know, he did some nice things, but he also threw a pick that set the Tampa Bay Bucs up in scoring position.
No, it wasn't perfect from Bortles. It was – I thought he would look good on Friday night. I didn't expect him to look that good. And that was really the one pass, the one that Bowers almost got. That was really the one pass that wasn't – that pass would have been on target if it got to his guy. So you could say that on the 11 passes he threw – all of them got to the target he intended them to with an opportunity almost for that guy to make a play on the ball. And the one exception is that Bowers pass.
Right.
I think that there might have been another play or two where he didn't make the right read necessarily, but the throw was always good. It was always good enough for the receiver to go make a play. A couple times Mike Brown just wasn't able to.
All right, Wild West Guns and Gold Monday will continue. The Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question today, getting a lot of feedback on this one, both on the Jaguars Today Facebook page and via Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, at 1010XL, Lauren. You can always tweet the program in a variety of ways. We asked you which performance from the Jags individually surprised you the most on Friday, good or bad, positive or negative. I don't think most people are surprised at certain players performing the way they did. You know, we expected the D-line as a whole to play well. Maybe you're surprised at just how good it played. So we'll get to some of your responses coming up, and somebody's going to win themselves a Jaguars Today t-shirt. That's straight ahead. We're live at the Florida Blue practice fields. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jaguars Today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Jaguars Today continuing a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran, and Frank Frangie earlier on the broadcast. Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight. Ask fans what drives you every day. And Tony, we asked them, looking back to Friday night, surprise, surprise, surprise. What surprised you, good or bad? Give us a sampling from the Twitter sphere.
Here's what we got on Twitter from Tony. We got thought Lee might actually get a catch. Hashtag Jaguars Today. From Matt, Chris Smith with his get off was offside once or twice, but he did have a sack. I was surprised in him. Hashtag Jaguars Today. From Doug, nothing jumped out to me, but I guess I would say Bortles looked comfortable. Would like to see him with the ones. Hashtag Jaguars Today, followed by five hashtag signs. I guess he had a few extra characters to burn there. From Brother Jason, we got McClendon was the biggest surprise to me. I never knew 300-plus pounds could get thrown around like that. Hashtag Jaguars Today. From Stevie, Blake, it felt weird to see a functional quarterback out there in a Jags uni and long passes. Hashtag Jaguars Today. From Eric, Chris Clemens, one-handed sack with a guy draped like a cape on him was awesome. Hashtag Jaguars Today. From Cam, Telvin Smith, an undersized linebacker who made a lot of noise, especially against the first-team offense. Hashtag Jaguars Today. From Jags movie guy, good, Marks Alualu, hoped would be good, but they were great. Bad, Mike Brown. Hashtag all the drop passes. Hashtag Jaguars Today. And from Kristoff, hashtag Jaguars Today, Blake Bortles and how much he will stare down the pass rush can now understand why he's compared to Ben Roethlisberger.
I'll get some on Facebook as well. And note Tony's reading of hashtag Jaguars Today. We encourage the hashtag.
Yeah, I don't
Jaguars
read him
today.
Unless it has it.
He won't read them unless he's got the hashtag Jaguars Today. We understand 140 characters or less, but be creative.
That's right.
It doesn't always take that much, and we love the creative hashtags that you throw in there as well. I saw Doug earlier tweeted he had hashtag Jaguars Today, and he had five characters left. He's put hashtag, 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 hashtag.
Yeah, I just talked about that about 90 seconds ago.
I know. I just went right over my head. It wasn't good. Facebook page. Chris said Chris Smith came out of nowhere for the good. Great find. Hashtag Jaguars Today. This is on Facebook. Josh Richburg said that Jags defense. Hashtag Jaguars Today. Hashtag TB got the D. That's what they got. They got that defense thrown at them. Chris Wayne, our pal, former program director.
Yeah.
Way back in the day from 1010XL said, he was surprised how badly Mike Brown crapped the bed. Hashtag Jaguars Today. J. Cole, good. Bortles, Hearns, Marks, Telvin Smith, Chris Smith, bad. Brewster, Henny. Eric Dulles said offensive line looked bad when Henny was in. Good was seeing Denard score a TD without fumbling. And Bortles throwing downfield instead of checking it down. Again, that one, look, Denard, it is a good sign.
It is.
That he flashes feet, but to me that was all about the play call. That's a jet fish touchdown right there. And right time, you took advantage of some guys who are trying to impress late in the game. They're trying to make a play for themselves, and the entire line goes one way, and they turn and option it out to the side, and Denard Robinson just had to beat his man to the corner. He's able to do it.
Denard's an interesting guy because I think that he has enough wiggle that he can make guys miss, but we haven't seen it. You know, at this level, we just haven't seen that yet from Denard Robinson. It's been more plays like that. When he's had big plays, it's because the play call gets him in space and his speed takes over. That athleticism takes over for him. I would like to see him make somebody miss a tackle from time to time. He seems to get squared up an awful lot on those run plays.
The fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Daily, in honor of Shark Week, Tom Bush Volkswagen pairing up with the Discovery Channel for the third consecutive year as presenting sponsor of Shark Week. Tom Bush BMW will be giving away Shark Week merchandise all throughout the week on their Facebook page. So go to Facebook for your chance to win there. The family of dealerships, we love them all, and they include Tom Bush Volkswagen, Tom Bush Mazda, Tom Bush BMW, and Tom Bush Mini. You can visit TomBush.com for more info when you're in the market for your next new or pre-owned vehicle, and on Twitter at Tom Bush Motors. All right, we got who do we have on the line? I think Larry is next up at 641-1010.
Yes.
Larry, you're on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
All right, thanks for having me. Obviously, Blake Bortles was awesome, and the defensive line was definitely amazing. But what surprised me the most, and this is coming from a Seven Bowl fan, was Telvin Smith. He seemed like he was all over the place on special teams, making tackles in the open field. And then when he put the pressure on the quarterback to cause the interception and then was still able to come down and make that final block for them to get in the end zone, I just wish I heard more about that on ESPN. It was awesome.
Well, you know, look, if you're waiting to hear more about Jags, as of now, reserve linebacker on ESPN, you're going to be sadly disappointed. And you're right, though. I thought Telvin Smith, there were a lot of guys that stood out. Telvin Smith was at the top of the list, and Derek Marks and Blake Bortles probably topped that list. But beyond that, I mean,
not far, yeah.
I mean, that pass rush, which led to the interception, and as Larry pointed out, the block. Right? He's not done with the play. He doesn't look around and say, oh, he picked it off. Where's he going? And he went down and made a play. And
energy, man.
There were so many plays. You see him hopping up and down. Like Ryan pointed out, they got it to nickel on second down, but he was on the field, for the second snap of the game defensively. And he's noticeable. You see 50 all over the place.
Absolutely. There was a play on a third down where he broke up a pass that looked like it was going to be close to a first down to the tight end on a third and 7 or 8 at one point in the game, and he's jumping up with his arms in the air because he knew he had knocked it out. I mean, that energy is one of the things we talked about him bringing to the table for this team, and it's just nice, you know, to see those things that are on the practice field translating to the game as much as they did for this Jaguar team. And I know, look, it's week one in the preseason. In the end, it doesn't mean anything, and we all understand that. It's that we've endured so many bad week ones of the preseason. Let us have some excitement. Yeah. Let us have some joy in what we saw on Friday night for once.
No one's, other than myself, facetiously, is saying this team's going undefeated.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you rather have this? Wouldn't you rather have things to point to and say, yeah, I can hang my hat on this? Yeah, there are things to clean up.
Absolutely.
But for one Friday night, with the new scoreboards and all the newness and all this, hope is the word I think you came out of that game with. And am I a bad person for saying thanks to Telvin for smoking a little doobie before the draft and enabling himself to fall to the fifth round? Honestly.
Seriously,
Did he look like a fifth round pick?
No.
I mean, he looks like, you know, a second or third round
pick. He does.
Flying around out there.
And they're treating him like one, too. I mean, he's on the field. He was on the field a ton.
His play is dictating that.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on with that. John the Baptist up next here on Jaguars Today. How are you, John?
Man, I'm doing well. How about y'all?
Fantastic.
Good.
What can we do for you?
All right, so check it out. Here's the first thing. Number one, Friday, I was in New York, right, and I was watching the Jags from my laptop. Listen, Friday was my birthday, and I don't care whether it's the preseason game or the Super Bowl. I was ecstatic to see that first quarter of the Jags defensive line just wrecking all kinds of havoc. I was screaming like a madman. And then from that all the way to the, you know, the add insult to injury, the interception for the touchdown,
man, I was just leaping for joy. The Jaguars this year, I think, with the absence of Cecil Short, A. Sanders, and this, you know, even unfortunately Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson, we were able to still get a win. And, you know, I just want to say that I am excited about us getting a win with some of our starters not even starting that are Stanley Weber's on offense. That's what I got to say.
Thank you, John. We appreciate it. Happy birthday to you, man.
Really got nothing out of the core of this offense as far as the skill put, because Marquise Lee didn't give him anything in that game. Mercedes Lewis had one catch. Toby didn't play. Cecil didn't play. Allen didn't play. So everything that they're expecting to be the guys they're counting on from a skill position standpoint did zero, basically, in that game for him Friday.
Yeah, and from that standpoint, they're still able to get a win. That's a, you know, again, win.
By the way, that's how they're going to win games. We all kind of have the idea that there's the offensive side of the ball is going to be a struggle at times this year. The defense is going to keep them in game. And if they're going to win, it's going to be games like 16-10, 17-13, because that defense just keeps them in it the whole time.
I may be the one person in America, too, who is actually excited to watch the 33-yard extra points, because we saw a couple of them missed on Friday night. It's not going to be as automatic. Imagine you're in a heavy rain situation,
sure. Right?
And I mean, extra point, as long as the hold's good, it's automatic. It's you don't miss those wide. You might see one in the National Football League, maybe two missed wide the whole year. And from 33 yards, I think you'll see a couple every
week. And once we get to the regular season, if this rule becomes a part of it, if you miss one in the first quarter,
right?
But if they miss one in the first quarter, well, now your strategy has to change at some point in the game, and that's interesting to watch these coaches have to coach, make a decision.
I think this actually puts more importance on the kickers. I know some of the kickers don't like to tinker in with the rules, and it's only going to be in effect for one more week of the preseason, and then it's done as an experiment, and then they'll evaluate it in the offseason. We got Andrew on the line, last one in under the wire here today on Jaguars Today. What's up, Andrew? How are you?
I'm very good. Yourself? Love the show. How are you doing today?
We're great. What's going on?
I second you on the field goal kicking. It makes them coach. There's no doubt about it. But I got to say, you know, I'm the biggest Bortles lover of them all. But I'm telling you, our first team offensive line is not stacking up. The second team matched up real good against their second team, and that's why Bortles had so much success. Also, I just can't wait, and it's true. The season tickets are going quick. I went up and did a quick scan of their interactive system. You barely get two together anymore. Something's going on in this town.
Well, we like that, man. We like to hear that, and hopefully you won't be able to get one together at some point.
Yeah, that's the idea, isn't it?
But regardless, you know, it's tough to judge for me, Tony. I pop up and I look at the stands. You know, who's in the clubs? I don't know. Our buddy Josh Carney from the Web.com Fantasy Forecast will be on with you tonight.
Yes,
he
will.
On the Tony Show, as a matter of fact, at 9 o'clock. Jaguars Monday debuts. We'll tell you about that in a second. But he said, from a preseason perspective, he goes, it was off the charts compared to recent years on how vibrant it was, the electricity. So I'll take the word for it of someone who was there.
Sure.
You know, and who
it's hard
was
to tell
in
some
the
of
bowl.
That. Yeah, it's hard to tell some of that sometimes from the booth where
it
we
really
were.
Is. Now, pregame, it looked like there were, you know, a big buzz of people milling around outside. But, again, whatever, man. I mean, it's preseason game one. I think fans are going to show up in big numbers this year, and hopefully the product, even if though they're not going 16-0, they're going to be exciting. Hopefully, at least maybe say 14 of those, you feel like they've got a chance to win in the fourth quarter of those football games, and then we'll see how the split comes out when it's all said and done. Jaguars Monday.
Yes.
Tonight, J.P. Shadrick, Tony Boselli, Pete Prisco is going to be live from Cincinnati Bengal training camp. So those guys will hold court from 6 to 8 o'clock every Monday throughout the season. That means the Fat Tony Show moving back.
That's a pretty good lead-in.
8 to 10 is not a bad slot for you either there as preseason week one is wrapped up. What do you have coming up tonight?
Got a lot coming up tonight. Obviously, a lot more on what happened on Friday night with the Jags in week one of the preseason. Take a closer look at some of the position battles we've been talking about since the beginning of training camp and how those may have played out in that game on Friday, who may be ahead in some of those things. Mark Long going to join me from the AP to talk about what he saw from the game on Friday. You already mentioned Josh Carney going to come on. We're going to focus on one topic, getting you ready for your fantasy drafts. That'll be at 9 o'clock tonight as well. Yeah, a lot going on. It's football season. It's finally here. I can't wait to be a part of it on your Monday night.
By the way, speaking of fantasy football, I'm playing in the Roto Bowl this year, and you can play head-to-head with me in a league. I've been tweeting out the link each of the last couple of days, so if you're on Twitter or Facebook, I'll put it on there as well. And basically, you can go to Play WCFF and go into click on Roto Bowl and just look for my name. Compete head-to-head with me. I'm going to be drafting on Sunday, the 24th of August, and I believe it's at 10 o'clock at night. So that's a good time for me. If it's a good time for you, it's a 12-man league, $279 entry, and ultimately the grand prize winner of the Roto Bowl wins $50,000.
That ain't bad.
That ain't bad. So be looking for the details. I'll tweet out again the direct link a few more times before the 24th rolls around. Thanks again to Wild West Guns and Gold. They do a great job with what they do, providing you the best deals on firearms and accessories here in Jacksonville. And you can even trade your gold for guns there as well. Our Monday sponsor, glad to have them on board. You know, I'm glad. Get to go watch a little practice coming up. We'll talk to the boys of XL Primetime on the other side. For Ryan O'Halloran, for Frank Frangie, and for Fat Tony, thanks to Lauren Brooks and Joe Fortunato and Rakeith Waters helping us out. I'm Mike Dempsey. This has been Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.